This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. Usually we're talking to an author, but today we're going to talk to an actor. His name is Scott Takeda. He's an Asian American actor, and he's here to talk about his acting experiences. Hello.
Well, hi there. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. You've worked with some really famous people.
I have, I guess.
So where did this all start? Acting. Where did it all start for you? Where was the first interest in it?
I have to kind of go back to my television news days. Because I worked in television news, and right before taking a job in Philadelphia, there was this, I happened to be working in television news in Denver, and there was this big Steven Seagal film, and they were also casting extras for Die Hard 2 that was going to be shooting some parts in Denver. And I remember back in the day driving around and listening to this radio DJs saying, "Hey, come on down to the Hyatt downtown and, you know, be ready for an open call to be an extra in these films." And I just kept on thinking, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. And then that kind of started the seed for me because, you know, I was working both behind and in front of the camera at television news.
So you had the camera aspect down, but had you done any acting at all?
You know, I had done school plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really minor, tiny school plays, nothing even kind of as formal as the drama school, but more like, you know, hey, we are doing Romeo and Juliet in our English, 8th grade English class, and so, you know, you'll do a little bit of a scene there as part of the class, so it's not even like a full-blown play, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But and then, you know, there is a kind of a performance aspect to being a reporter. You know, you're on camera. You have to enunciate. So there's some of that, but for me, I think just driving around and listening to an open call for a Steven Seagal film, and which back in the day, I mean, he was a huge, enormous, you know, top box office star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of planted the seed for me. And as my television news career started to wane down, mainly because of I had just lost interest in it, the idea of doing some kind of performance in front of the camera still, you know, stuck with me.
So that was good. You had that experience in front of the cameras. You knew exactly what it was like to be in. Because I mean, people that first go in front of a camera—that's something you have to adapt to. It's not something you can just stand in front of a camera and act. And there's more. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you come from a stage, you know, perspective, you're used to an audience. So at least you're somewhat used to performing to a specific part of the room. But, you know, you not necessarily having to deal with microphones, though obviously the modern performances, they all wear microphones, so, you know, everyone in the theater can hear them. But lights, or how to turn your head at a certain point, you know, TV film can be quite technical at times.
So how long did you spend on the set of the Steven Seagal movie, and what movie was it? Which one was it?
Yeah, and that was the cool part is because I actually, you know, I was leaving. I did not actually go out for the extra role because I was leaving to move to Philadelphia to continue my television news career back in the day. But, you know, a few years ago, I had a chance to be cast in an actual Steven Seagal film, not as an extra, but actually as a cast member. So I worked on Code of Honor, which I think is streaming on Netflix right now, and you can see me as a slimy attorney.
Right. That must have been fun to play.
It really was, you know, and it was kind of, when I was on set, I kind of realized, hey, the dream had kind of come full circle. You know, at the time, I was just interested in being an extra, which, you know, who knows if you had even been on camera, but, you know, here I'm actually on camera and saying words and all that kind of stuff. So, really kind of nice.
And did you get to meet Steven Seagal?
You know, that is a great question. He, all the scenes that I worked one day on set, and all the scenes that we were shooting that particular day was on his rest day. So he was at his hotel.
You never even got to meet him?
I didn't get to meet him. And you know, here's the weird part of it, is, you know, I talked to my publicist about it, and they didn't even have a red carpet premiere, so it's not even like I had a chance to go to the red carpet and meet him at the after party. So,
but it's a big, but it was a role that you could really sink your teeth into. That's the experience is what they look for. I mean, that's what these producers casting agents look for. So, you, why did you get tired of being a news person? What was it about the news that you didn't like? Were you weather or what regular news?
I was regular news, and you know, the one thing I think news is a very nomadic business. I mean, the people that do it really do quite a public service. You know, I mean, our democracy depends on us being an informed population. The thing that I kind of discovered being the fact that I had to move from market to market to market to market to grow your career is you're never in a place long enough that you kind of climb up the ladder of seniority. Mm-hmm. So I started getting really tired of working weekends and having Mondays and Tuesdays off. You know, it's one thing if you have like maybe a Thursday, Friday off, because people, you know, sometimes will have a 3-day weekend so you can actually have a day off with people.
Right.
But years upon years of Mondays and Tuesdays off and working weekends, you know, it just kind of got a little tiring for me. And I just had other interests that kind of pulled me in another direction.
Not good for your social life either. It's hard to meet people on Mondays and Tuesdays when they're working.
It's interesting that, you know, once I stopped doing the news thing, my social life instantly perked up. Yes.
It is. It's hard because you're the only one not working, or basically. I mean, unless you have a lot of retired people, I guess. But you know, and it's you know, you don't really hang out with retired people per se, I would guess, not socially.
And here's the other thing too: is I was not just working weekends; I was working nights. So it's not even like I was working like an 8 to 5 on a Saturday, and then could go pick up pick a name, Carol. At 6 p.m. No, I was working 2 to 10.
So you got your first thing with the Steven Seagal movie. What was that like for you? And were you hooked instantly? Was it something you knew you wanted to do for the rest of your life?
You know, my first kind of experience as far as doing TV without the news type of thing was I did a reenactment television show for the Animal Planet.
Really?
And I know. Yeah, the Animal Planet, Busted. It's called Busted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I played a detective, and I they also cast me in another episode where I played a sergeant, and it was just kind of fun.
And that's the great thing about TV today. There's so many different aspects of it. I mean, you have so many more opportunities than you had 20, 30 years ago, even 10 years ago. 10, oh, yeah. Maybe not so much, but nowadays, I mean, you've got Netflix, you've got Hulu, you've got TV, cable, you know, everything. There's so much out there, so many opportunities out there.
I was just reading an article on the Hollywood Reporter, and you know, it's the current term right now in Los Angeles is peak TV. I mean, there's 450 television shows right now.
And that's insane.
I mean, that's an astonishing number of TV shows.
I think I watch about 10 of them.
I know.
Probably you even less.
Yeah. So there's a lot of cool opportunities out there for folks who want opportunities.
And that's great for you, because I know you just celebrated your 50th birthday.
Wow. Yes, I did. Holy cow.
Wait, is that hard to believe that you're 50?
It is, and it's a little disorienting for me because of my look. I still cast in my late 30s into 40s.
Oh, great.
So I think if you were to ask a general public my age, you would probably get anywhere between 38 and maybe 43.
So what do you do to keep young? What do you work out a lot?
Stay out of the sun, man. Holy cow, that stuff will dry you out and wrinkle you up. So that, and I just think some of it is the genetics. You know, I'm Japanese, and I think Asians just tend, in general, to look a little bit younger. So most of my peer group is, you know, early 30s to early 40s. So I just naturally, I think, view myself as like the age of my peers.
Right, right.
So I guess I have a youthful outlook.
So when you think about, we think about all the Asian actors out there today, the two that come to mind right now for me are Lucy Liu and Steven Yeun, who are both terrific.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Absolutely terrific.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are others, including you, but but there's not an awful lot of them that I can think of.
Yeah, and I think that is...
Daniel Dae Kim's another one, but...
Yeah, Daniel Dae Kim. I mean, there's folks out there. I don't know exactly how to explain it. My particular wheelhouse, if you will, my particular specialty is at least half the roles I book were originally written for a white person. And you know, it's even to the point where...
Does that annoy you?
Excuse me?
Does that annoy you at all that they were originally written for white men?
No, I mean, I was on Lifetime's Devious Mates last year, and, you know, they didn't even change my character name.
Is that the one that Susan Lucci's on?
No. Was Susan on?
She was on one of those. I thought it was that one. Might have been another one.
She is, exactly. No, you are correct. Yes, Susan Lucci, exactly. And so I was Dr. Brooks, you know, and a year before that, I booked a Mr. Adams role on Grimm. And there's even a part of that where one of the lead characters is walking in there saying, Mr. Adams. And it's like, well, okay, yes, I look like Mr. Adams. So, you know, they don't even change their character names sometimes. I was just in a film last year, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, playing...
Right.
Tina Fey's boss, and my character is Ed Faber. So, you know, Faber is a classic Asian name. So, yeah, I mean, it's I have this kind of aura about me that it's like, I like to describe it, I'm a banana. I'm yellow on the outside, but very, very white on the inside. And so I think I just have this kind of natural, people just think I'm white. I don't know. So to answer your question about like Lucy Liu and you know, Daniel Dae Kim, I have no idea. I mean, I tend to, I'm the guy that they cast when I need somebody ethnic, but they don't want ethnicity.
So how do you approach, working on Whiskey, I know you worked with Tina Fey, so how do you approach working with somebody who's so monumentally popular? How do you work with them, and is it easy? Are you nervous the first day when you meet them?
Not really. I mean, I think I've fortunately been around long enough that I kind of realized that we're all in it together. You know, that Tina was not originally... Tina Fey, you know, she was Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And so
she seems like she'd be a nice person.
Oh my God, so incredibly nice. You know, my publicist told me right before I went on set that she had a reputation for being incredibly nice, and I reported back to my publicist, and I report out to your listeners that she is incredibly nice. And very just kind of down to earth. And I guess one of the examples that I used is it's not unusual when you work on a film set or whatnot that, you know, during lunch break, the stars sometimes will, you know, take their meal at their you know, trailer, or maybe they'll go out. And it's not that they're trying to be separate from everyone else. It's just that they're incredibly busy. So a lot of times when they're at their trailer, they're working with, you know, their producers and whatnot, and taking a ton of phone calls because they've been on set all day.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I noticed about Tina is, you know, she was standing in line there. So it's not like she sent, a person out there to get her lunch, and she sat at the tables with everyone. So very, very down to earth, very, very nice. So
you don't really seem like you're very fearful as an actor, like your age or that the roles won't be there. And you seem pretty confident in yourself.
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's acting.
Is that what it is? So
yeah.
How long were you on Days of Our Lives, or are you still on Days of Our Lives?
I don't know if I'm still on Days of Our Lives. I've shot 5 episodes so far. Every episode that I've shot to this point, my character, Dr. Lee, seems to get deeper and deeper over his head. At the last 5th episode that I shot, I called my lovely bride and said, I think they're going to kill off my character. So, and I said, hopefully they'll at least bring me back so I can have my death scene.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'd love to return. Obviously, with it being a soap opera, I can return as my evil twin or my good twin. Or they even allow ghosts to come back. So maybe I'll come back as a ghost. Or maybe they haven't killed me off. I'm just, you know, disappeared somewhere. And eyewitness hiding or something. So,
the amazing thing about soap operas is you have people that are on today and then were on the same soap opera 35 years ago. It's like, it's crazy out there. And it's like they get this character, and this character just totally is taken over by, I mean, the public just totally embraces this character. And they're on years and years and years later, and then they come back again. It's a crazy world, the soap opera world.
I was just watching one of the episodes I was on, and they kind of reintroduced a character. You know, one of the characters was, I don't know, rummaging around the docks near Salem, Massachusetts, and she opens up a crate, and inside is, you know, some long lost character going, "Oh my God, Philippe," or whatever his name was. And
the interesting thing is, I don't even think there's a witch on the show, even though the town is named Salem.
I know.
I mean, Deidre Hall's kind of funny. She's got like an alternate personality and things, so she's probably as close as you can get to a witch.
The interesting thing is I did play a doctor on Days, and what was really kind of fascinating is that every so often they'd have me, you know, fill out a prescription or something like that. And so they had, you know, the prescription was already pre-printed, Dr. Marlena Evans Black on it. So it's like, oh, okay. So they probably printed a whole bunch of these prescription pads with her character name on it. And, of course, I'm not Deidre Hall and Marlena Evans Black. So
how many times have you played a doctor? It's more than once.
Five episodes so far.
But I mean, you know, overall, how many different roles have you been a doctor?
Oh, how many? Well, wow, that's a great question. I don't. Maybe 8, 9.
Oh, really?
Like
so they like you as a doctor for some reason. You're a good doctor in movies,
you know,
and TV.
Yeah, the thing I like to say is, overall, I tend to play a smart guy in charge. And so, so lawyers, doctors, physicists, news directors. So that's kind of what I've been playing lately. And certainly a doctor can be in charge. So
you kind of remind me of an actor. I don't know if you remember him. You probably do. James Shigeta, who used to play like really mean, nasty roles in different TV shows, and he was around for a long time. I think he finally passed away. But you sort of remind me of him for some reason when I look at you.
Oh, okay. Die Hard.
What's that?
Oh yeah. Okay. Die Hard.
Yeah, he was in Die Hard. Yes, that's correct. He was one of the nasty businessmen that I think owned the place that gets taken over, I think, if I remember correctly. You're right. He was one of the real heavy-duty businessmen. Had lots of money, I'm sure. But Die Hard was such a terrific movie.
Yeah, and you know, overall, I've played good guys, but I think there's a little bit of a strain of bad guy, you know.
Would you like to do more of that?
Sure. As they say, bad guys are always more fun to play.
So when you watch movies today, and you look at, are there any that you look at and you think, oh, I wish I'd gotten that role?
You know, it's fascinating. I am very fortunate to have had the opportunity to read for a lot of roles. And I kind of almost always, I try to, if I read for a role, I try to watch the film. Or the TV show, just to kind of see, hey, who did they pick? And I have to admit, I think there's a purity to the casting process.
Mm-hmm.
And really, well over 90% of the time, I agree with who they cast. I think a lot of it has to do with the look.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is a role on Logan. The recent X-Men.
Oh yeah.
And it was for an army colonel, and I knew kind of reading it. I don't think I'm gonna book this because I just look younger. I look like I could probably be at most a major, but to be colonel, you know, you really kind of need to have some at least on your face some life, you know, wear and tear. And so I have to admit, when I saw the film, but when I saw who they cast, it says, yeah, they cast the right person.
Right.
And I just was watching a little bit of Netflix Love, kind of a series on Netflix, and I had a chance to read for that, and I liked who they cast. So usually I applaud what they've done.
Yeah, the casting directors are amazing. I mean, you look at some of these and they're just perfect for the role. And yeah, you're going to find the occasional one that you're like, well, what's that person doing there? They seem to be out of place. But that doesn't happen all that often. I mean, usually with a cast, you have to have a good set of people, a good set of reliable, hardworking, good at what they do actors.
Exactly. And, you know, I kind of remember a speech that Ben Affleck had given when he was talking about the film that he had directed, Argo. And he was even talking about folks that were featured extras. And he was specifically talking about a scene there where you had, you know, Argo took place during the takeover of the Beirut in the embassy,
right, yes,
in Iran, and how all the embassy workers were trying to shred all the information.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and so there was a scene there where they had a whole bunch of people, a lot of them kids, sitting around trying to piece together all this shredded information to find out information. And, you know, he was applauding all the folks that he had cast as featured extras there. Because had they overacted or not looked like, you know, somebody who would be Iranian, it would have stood out, and suddenly you would have not believed the film. In a very, very critical scene.
It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. It all has to fit together.
It totally is. It totally is, and there is a purity to the casting process, and the casting directors out there. Deserve a huge kudos for the work that they do to scour and try to find all the right pieces to fit that puzzle together.
And it amazes you how quickly these movies come out. I mean, you hear about a movie, and next you know it's coming out, and you're like, wow, they really know what they're doing. They really know how to get everything together and make sure that they have the right people involved with it. And, you know, and I was looking at a movie called Jack Reacher with Tom Cruise last night on FX, and I'm looking at Rosamund Pike, and I'm thinking, boy, that woman, there's something about her that just exudes star power. You just know she's going to be big. Because she's such a beautiful one, you can see she's got the talent for acting. You can see it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that always apparent on the set? Can you actually see when you're watching the film, the movie or TV show you're doing? Can you usually tell when there's talent there?
You know, usually, I've had a chance to talk to Rosamund several times on red carpets for Gone Girl, and I can say that she's incredibly nice. As well. So as a human being,
she's mesmerizing almost. I mean, I look at her and I think, wow, this is a beautiful woman.
Yeah, and very unassuming too. Completely unassuming. I was talking with her during the Golden Globes, and I was saying, so are you excited about Thursday? And she goes, oh, what's Thursday? I said, that's when the Academy Award nominations are announced. She goes, oh, really? I had no idea. You know, and she was like, oh, very, very buzzy about Gone Girl amongst all the critics and whatnot, and yet had no clue whatsoever, first of all, when the Academy Award nominations were to be announced, and, you know, whether or not she was like, she had just had a baby at the time. She goes, I honestly want to get back to London to see my daughter. So it's like, you know, who knows? And, you know, she ended up getting a nomination for it. But just, yeah, and she's all, she's very, very nice. And I think she's also out in a new film right now, The United Kingdom, which I've heard a lot of really terrific things about, too.
That's good. It's great to hear about these new movies. And one of the ones that looks familiar, looks good to me, is that Lost City of Z. That's the one that I... It's funny how your mind just looks at these and you think, now that one looks interesting. And you look at another movie and you'll think, oh, that doesn't look all that great. But your mind, at least my mind, is always looking at movies and judging them right away when I see the previews.
Okay.
And I think to myself, oh, no, I don't think I want to see that one. You get quite a picture from the previews. Sometimes you get too much of a picture from the previews in my mind. But it's interesting how a movie either turns you off or turns you on. Or you either like it or you don't.
And it's, I think that's kind of marketing these days. And I've seen more and more, you know, trailers show way too much. So it's kind of at the point where if we want to see a film, I try to actually avoid the trailers. Like, I know there's another Star Wars coming out, and I'm doing everything that I can to avoid the trailers. I want to just walk in and be completely surprised.
So are there any movies being produced even as we speak that you would love to be a part of, that you're trying to get on, that you're trying to, that you can think of?
Wow. Great question. I'm kind of coming up with a blank right now. Let's start with the overall basics. Growing up as a child in Fort Collins, Colorado, I was a huge comic book fan. So any comic book film, doesn't matter what it is, would love to be on that. So let's kind of just throw that out there to the universe. Hello, universe and casting director.
That's right. Hopefully they're listening right now.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, you know.
I think there's a lot of really terrific TV out there, so I'd certainly love to be on any Netflix or HBO, Showtime, or...
So you could have been a doctor in that Oprah Winfrey movie that's coming up on Saturday. That looks interesting.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
I can see you as a doctor on that.
A lot of people can see me as a doctor, and you know, if I end up my entire career playing majority doctors, that's awesome.
But it's not what you want. I don't think it's what you really want, though. You really want to expand and be something different. I'm sure with each film you want to be something different.
Oh, sure. However, the way I look at it, I mean, if all I'm doing is playing a doctor in a hospital saying, Well, you know, Mrs. Miller,
right,
he's got a lot of damage to his liver. I just don't know. I mean, if I'm doing that, then yes, you are correct.
But look at somebody who's very early career. She played the doctor, Nicole Kidman. Look where she is today.
Sure, sure. And, you know, it all depends on where the doctor is in the film or TV show. I mean, if it's Grey's Anatomy, you know, they have very, very full lives outside of the hospital, or sometimes very, very complicated lives in the hospital. So you're still playing these really kind of cool shades and colors and emotional character arcs. So, you know, doctors are people. So at a certain point, it doesn't necessarily matter what the employment is, as long as you're playing rich characters.
Exactly. Now, your wife is a producer?
Yeah, she says she's a director-producer.
Yeah.
She does a lot of unscripted programming.
Now, is she related to Gloria Allred?
You would think so. You would think so. I mean, when you type in her name, a lot of times you get hits on Gloria. But no, there is no relation as far as we know.
That's an interesting, because that's a very unusual name. You don't see that name very often.
Sure, yeah. You know, I have no idea. I know she's German.
So what kind of projects does she work on? TV, movies?
Again, a lot of unscripted programming. So she does a lot of, you know, things like for HGTV and the Food Network.
So you being an actor, now, you've been behind the scenes. You see it all happening. What really holds a movie together? Is it more the actors or behind the scenes that really holds the stuff together? Or is it a combination of everything?
I think it's a combination of everything. I mean, if you have one weak area, it can really hamper a project. I mean, the projects have different budgets and scales. And so I'm sure we've all seen a TV show or a film, you know, and let's just say it's a little bit of a period piece. Or let's just say it's supposed to take place at a certain time of year, okay? I think the Hallmark holiday films are mm-hmm. notorious for taking place right around the Christmas holidays, but you look in the background and you see, you know, trees with green leaves on them. And, you know, they may have a scene there where they're walking around and you see snow, but if you look in the background, you're seeing a park full of green, and that's kind of a failure a little bit on the art department, or or maybe the locations department not being able to find certain shots with angles where you can avoid trees in the background, because I mean, you can't blame them for not shooting during cold weather.
Tell me about this movie, The Tale, you did with Laura Dern. What's it about? When's it coming out?
That's a terrific question. I'm not really quite sure when it's coming out. I just had a ADR session with the director where we re-recorded some dialogue. I think they are aiming for right now fall festivals, so it could be like Telluride or Toronto Film Festival.
What is it about?
It's kind of investigative mystery. So it's about a documentary director named Jennifer who, in the middle of producing one of her documentaries, gets a call from her mother who had discovered her diary as a child. And this diary kind of talks about some very salacious, disturbing facts. And at the time, Jennifer was like, no, that's not how it happened. No, that's not what happened. And so what happens with this particular character, Jennifer, is she ends up doing kind of what she does with her documentary films, which tend to be investigative. She ends up kind of turning her life into an investigation. What really did happen when I was a child? Because it looks like potentially she may have either made up a story or blacked out the details. So you kind of follow this as she's investigating her life and talking to people who are players in her life.
That sounds interesting.
Did this event really happen?
Now, are they looking? Is it going to be a big screen movie, TV movie, or what? Do you know?
It is. It's kind of in that vein that would be kind of a Dallas Buyers Club type of thing. So it's definitely.
What do you play?
I play one of the people near the very, very tail end of the film, who is giving this big civic award and defending the guy who might potentially be the big bad guy who
You have to be so careful what you say anymore.
I'm trying to figure out what I can and cannot say. I play Mr. Watata, who's kind of this society person who's defending a person who may be one of the big bad guys.
So how many days did you spend on set? I mean, was it a big role for you?
I spent a full day on set. So we shot probably, it all took place in the same location. So we were able to get all the scenes shot in one day. So I probably shot about 4 scenes in one day.
It's interesting that they do that, and when you watch the final film, you would never know that they did all of them in one day.
Yeah, yeah. And the entire scene, I think, probably takes place over 2 minutes. It took a full day to shoot that.
And Laura Dern, of course, is really big from Big Little Lies, which is so wonderful.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That was something really special, and I made the mistake of reading the book right in the middle of the series, and I shouldn't have done it because the book has so much more than the series, and it got me kind of confused, you know. But a lot of the same elements, it all adds up to the same thing. They don't change the ending or anything, but they change little things in it. And you know, you're a purist when you read a book, you want it to be exactly like the book is when you see the show, and it never is. I mean, let's face it, never happens.
Sure.
But
yeah, this is going to be a big year for Laura. I mean, she obviously had the Big Little Lies. She's in a small, tiny film called Star Wars coming out in December.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten she was in that.
She's in Twin Peaks, which is coming out very, very shortly. I think in May.
End of May, right about Memorial Day. Yeah, and there's a lot of secrecy on that one. There's like you don't know anything about the plot on that one.
Yeah, and then there's this film called The Tale, which she's headlining, and I think this is, when I read the screenplay, it's like, I've never seen any story like this, and so I'm very, very hopeful that it turns out as well as the producers hope it is, and maybe it goes on a really nice long festival run.
So, as an actor, what do you hope for in the future? I mean, what would make... What would make your year? What would make your life a major role in a film? I mean, what do you hope for?
Oh, geez. You certainly want the big roles. You certainly want, series leads on TV shows. Ultimately, though, as exciting as all that stuff is, it still boils down to the fact that what I think every single person on this planet wants, which is just to kind of make a living doing what you enjoy. You know, being able to put food on the table, keep a roof over the head, you know, send the kids off to college and maybe have a little bit of extra money for retirement and maybe a vacation. I mean, as strange as it seems, it's still rather a very simple kind of,
No, that's honest. That doesn't support...
Earning a living,
right?
And so that's kind of been my big focus, and I've been very fortunate to be able to do that, and I hope to continue to be able to do that.
It doesn't sound like you have a lot of time on set to actually become friends with anybody, any of the other actors or producers and directors, other than to know them or they know your face. But it doesn't sound like you have a lot of time to be to make new friends.
It kind of all depends. If it's a film like The Tale, where even though I've got about 4 scenes, but you're only on set a day, yeah, you have maybe a chance to get to know maybe a producer or two. If the screenwriter is there, maybe you're hanging out with the screenwriter, maybe your co-star and the director. That's about it. Like with Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, that was shot over. For me, it shot over a month. I was kind of coming and going, so you know, got to know a lot more people on that one, which is always kind of nice because when you go to the red carpet and you have Tina Fey, you know, saying, "Hey, Scott, good to see you." It's like, you know, feels good, you know. So it all depends on how long you stay on set. Sets can be kind of a very kind of closed environment, and especially if you shoot on location where no one has their home anywhere around, so everyone is kind of just forced to bond with each other, it can be kind of a nice bonding experience.
So you've directed some short films, and you have one coming up, is that correct?
Yeah, we're just kind of in the post-production process right now of our latest short film called The Outsider.
And when you say short film, how many minutes are we talking?
This is our longest one to date. So this is 17, 18 minutes.
Okay.
We've done a lot of kind of that 7 to 8 minute range.
Do you like doing those?
I do. You know, it's really great training. It's nice to be able to take all the stuff that I've learned on being on set. And then I do also earn a living as a director of corporate films. So corporations will hire out my skills and talents to do stuff for them. So be able to take all those skills and then apply them on something more narrative.
Well, what's really your passion? Is acting really your passion? Is that really what you want to do for the rest of your life? Is that really the main thing that you're after?
The clearest answer that I have for you is no. It's kind of all the above. I'm a visual storyteller. So more than anything else, I love telling stories visually. And I can be in front of the camera, behind the camera. At a certain point, for me, it's not necessarily as important because I still get the excitement of everything. You know, we're kind of in the post-production or editing process right now for this short film, and when I was kind of doing the rough cut, you know, it's like 10 p.m. at night, and I can't go to bed because I've got, you know, I've got all these ideas of, oh, what if I put this shot here? Or
you're obsessed. You're really obsessed with it.
And it's not like this madness. Well, I guess it is a little bit of madness if you can't go to sleep by 10 o'clock. But it's this passion. I think it's more passion driven and excitement driven. And so, yeah, I mean, that gets my juices flowing. I just shot a whole bunch of still images, and I've been trying to get all the stuff on my plate kind of finished so I can kind of dig in the Photoshop and just kind of take a look at these new images that I shot.
Would you like to direct a TV show?
Yes, but with a huge asterisk. I think TV works very, very different. It moves so quickly, and there's a lot of really kind of intricate moving parts. And so I think the thing I would like to do more than anything else is before directing a TV show is to work as a series regular on a TV show to kind of get to know the people behind the scenes and then, you know, raise my hand if we're like in season 3 and say, hey, I'd like to direct an episode. A TV works really different, and I don't know that process nearly as well. So I would feel really over my head if I was offered an opportunity to direct a TV show.
There's a TV show called The Americans, and last season they had an Asian an Asian woman on, and she just stole. For me, she just stole this. Every scene she was in, she steals.
And
she's just this. And if you ever get the chance to watch the fourth season, you'll know what I mean. When you see her, you'll see what I mean. There are certain actors that when they're on screen, they're fun to watch. They're just a lot of.
Sure.
Anthony Hopkins is one of them. I'm just throwing him out right now. But there's so many more. But how do you make it? How do you do that so that you are memorable? I mean, do you consciously try to do that to make yourself memorable so people remember you for other films when they're doing other films?
Wow, you know, I think that's a dangerous place to be if you try to do that, because I think more than anything else, my approach is to try to serve the story. So what do I need to do to serve the story? Because if I'm going to try to steal the scene and it doesn't end up serving the story, then I've I'm screwing over everyone.
And not to mention that people remember you may not get hired again.
Yeah.
So there is that danger.
So I think from my perspective, it's much more important that I, you know, it may be important for me, my character, just to be kind of in the background. I mean, obviously delivering information, but not at any moment making people go, oh my gosh, who is that person there?
Right.
And there are, it all depends on the role. I mean, there are different, like on a TV show, there are different tiers of roles. And, mm-hmm. and if you are a co-star, that's probably the lowest tier for speaking roles. And really, your job is to maybe help move the story forward. But if you're a guest star, oh my gosh, those are much larger roles. And yeah, you do. It's just kind of naturally in the writing mm-hmm. that you get to play with more. And if that's the case, then they do want you to kind of stand out a little bit.
It'd be fun to see you as like Woe Fat or something on Hawaii Five-0, that nasty villain kind of guy. That I mean, that'd be fun to watch you in something like similar to that.
Oh yeah, would love to. Not to mention it's used in Hawaii, so hey.
And what's his name? Steven Weber's been on the New Orleans show with Scott Bakula, and he's this nasty mayor. And I'm thinking, what a great character to get. I mean, to sink your teeth into it. Now I can really be nasty and really give it to Scott. You know, and how much fun that must be.
Oh yeah. So you're talking about NCIS New Orleans?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love entertainment. That's one of the reasons I'm talking to you, because entertainment is, to me, is fascinating. I'm totally fascinated by how they do it, how they make it so real, and you know exactly what it takes. And that's what I'm trying to get into. I want to discover how they do these shows, how they do these movies. You know, and that's fun to me. That's a lot of fun to me.
Well, very cool.
But you get to do the acting. You get to go on the set, and it isn't as easy as it sounds. I mean, you have to prepare. You have to know your lines. You have to be ready, and you've got a lot of people watching you, making sure you're doing the right thing.
Exactly, and sometimes they change the lines at the very, very last minute. So all the work that you've done the previous night to memorize your script suddenly gets thrown out the door because you have to re-memorize again.
Right. Now, what do you have anything in the works that might be coming up that you can't talk about?
I just read for a lead of a feature film yesterday, which I cannot mention. So I'm constantly reading stuff, and who knows? The casting process is a very, very pure one. So
now, if you mentioned that name, would we recognize the name?
No. This is a feature film,
okay.
So it's not like it's a TV show where they go, oh, well, it's, you know, who knows, Stranger Things or whatever it is, you know. So it's, you know, I remember having Dallas Buyers Club on my resume. And nowadays people go, oh, my God, Dallas Buyers Club. But before it came out, you're looking at this Dallas Buyers. What is that?
Right.
So that's the fun thing about having feature films is, you know, it takes a while before they come out that people go, oh, my gosh, Gone Girl, of course. Yes, I know what that is.
Well, I guess, and seeing who's attached to the film, knowing that Matthew McConaughey's in Dallas Buyers Club, it kind of gives you a heads up saying, oh, it's probably a good movie if he's involved with it. I mean, they don't get it.
Sure.
Matthew McConaughey doesn't get involved with bad movies per se, usually. But, so I guess it's the person that's involved with it, too, not only the story. You may read the storyline and think, oh, that doesn't sound very exciting. But who is attached to it makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly, and I was just in a film a couple months ago called The Space Between Us.
Right.
And, you know, you take a look at that, Gary Oldman, Janet Montgomery, B.D. Wong, Carla Gugino, Asa Butterfield. So it's like, yeah, big, big, big name people. Britt Robertson.
Now, Asa Butterfield was the kid in Ender's Game, right?
Ender's Game, yeah, he was Ender's Game and Hugo and.
Oh right, Hugo Cabret, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, I know we have to let you go, and it's been a lot of fun to talk to you, and I'll be anxious to see what you're going to be doing next, be following your career. Hopefully, we'll see you in some really good roles in the future.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And we've been talking to Scott Takeda, and his latest film is The Tale, which isn't out yet, but you can look for it when it comes out with Laura Dern. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.